Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and today I'm with Corey Goodwin of Dave Winchester Sporting Camps, and that's out of New Brunswick, Canada.
Yes, sir, it is.
Corey, man, it's great to have you on the show. We visited quite a bit today over at your booth, but it's been a while since I've been to New Brunswick.
Absolutely.
But it's fascinating country.
Fascinating country, I guess it is. It's God's country.
God's country.
I could say the same thing about your area, too.
But. Oh, yeah, we could start a real argument there,
but we don't have time for that.
We'll take that up another time.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, we've chatted a lot about it. I've been watching a lot of people come into your podcast all last couple of days, and I've been looking forward to getting on chat with you about a few things. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
And I was attracted to your booth because I was up there several years ago at an acquaintance of yours.
Right.
Texas River Outfitters,
yes, sir.
I think.
Good operation.
And
yeah.
had a grand time. And, boy, had to go back, had to take my wife back, and she killed her first bear. We both have killed one bear each. It's not like we're big bear hunters. That's just something we want.
It's a bucket list. It's a bucket list for a lot of people, yeah.
But what a great, great adventure. And, of course, it was a little nerve-wracking for my wife,
Right, right.
And she didn't do it the first time because she just didn't know if she could handle that or not,
Right.
But she saw how excited I got about it, and she wanted to share that experience.
Sure.
So, hey.
It's addictive. I'm telling you, a lot of people come bear hunting for the first time. It's like turkey hunting or it's like any hunting, really. Once you start that new venture, you got to do it again. You want to get bigger. A lot of guys come to camp the first time. First-time hunters often shoot a small bear. They've never seen a bear before. Every bear they see looks huge. So they'll shoot a 150-pound bear, 180-pound bear.
Yep.
So what's that? What do they want? They want to come back for a bigger bear next time. They'll see the guy that's been there 2 or 3 years in a row comes out with a 350-pound bear. They want that too, right? So it's good. We got a really good operation up there right now. Lots of bears.
Well, man, you're in a gorgeous part of the country, and first time I'd ever been to New Brunswick. And we drove once. It was like 27 hours for us.
Right.
But we flew in somewhere in Maine and then rented a car, went up the second time, I think. But, we took some extra days because my wife used to travel around quite a bit. She spent some time in Maine. I'd never been there. We had to do the lobster thing and
sure,
all that.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Went to the L.L. Bean store.
Oh, yeah.
Was quite an experience.
Quite an experience, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh,
now, Maine's a beautiful state, and we're lucky to border Maine. We share the same forest with Maine, so eastern wild turkey, as migrated to New Brunswick from Maine. They were introduced to New Brunswick, but also a lot migrated from Maine, right? So,
yeah.
It's been good to us, big time. Yeah, we've got a beautiful area to hunt in. It's a lot of rolling hills. I call it the upper end of the Appalachian Mountain Range. A lot of rolling hills and valleys, a lot of streams, lakes, that sort of thing. So it's a beautiful area.
Oh, it really is. And I'd love to go back in the fall and see Maine. I was in the military with a friend from up in there, and he was showing me photographs kind of during the fall harvest and the hog slaughtering time,
Right.
And it was just so keen. But I was tickled pink to get up into New Brunswick and experience all that. Not only got to do the bear hunting, but I'm a big time fly fisherman.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I had to get in the river, and I caught a few trout. And of course, the salmon runs were still going at that time. I don't think they were super strong,
right.
But they hadn't started yet when I was there.
Right, right.
So I didn't get to experience that. But I actually left the camp and just went touring around one day, and I went and visited some of the other, the fly fishing shops.
Sure,
and got to learn a little bit about the history of the salmon and how all that operated.
Yeah.
It was so cool to me. It seemed a bit strange to me that outfitters kind of held a license, I guess, for a certain pool.
Yeah, the riparian water rights. That's right. Yeah, we talked about that. So exactly. Each outfitter was given a pool to fish at. yeah. called riparian water rights, so nobody else could fish that pool.
Well, it makes sense from a you know, a conservation sense and,
right.
and making things operate.
Well, it's like us with our private leases on our land for our outfitting business. I mean, it just it creates less conflict when you have that right to hunt that area.
Absolutely.
So for me, example, I mean, I lease 53,000 acres of private land.
Wow.
So it's mine as an outfit. Now, that doesn't protect me from resident hunters.
Right.
However, I don't see any resident hunters in that. We're quite remote, so
yeah.
there's no hunting pressure from outside resident hunters. Or and where it's my land, no other outfitter hunts that land as well. So it gives us that chance to conduct business, gain a clientele without any crossover from other outfitters. So it just keeps the conflict. 30 years ago, it wasn't like that. 30 years ago, outfitters were sabotaging each other, and it was a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Well, I can see that happening, but is there some regulatory agency now that controls that?
There is. We've got a great operation, United Guides and Outfitters in New Brunswick, and they've been working as a lobby group to help create new guidelines around what is an outfitter, you know, defining an outfitter, to get rid of a lot of the loopholes that the guys were jumping into to sidestep a lot of regulations. So it's been working well for us, big time.
Oh, I'm sure it certainly is, and it's got to be just a wonderful feeling to have that much space of your own.
Absolutely.
And yeah. it kind of flabbergasted me that you mentioned that you only have six hunters at a time in a camp.
Six hunters at a time, that's all we do.
Wow.
You know, we try not to overhunt. I can't speak for some other outfitters, but for us, we try to keep it small and simple.
Yeah.
We run a 2-to-1 guide to hunter ratio.
Yeah.
So nobody's getting left out. We want everyone to be involved all the time. I want my guys to want to come back. It's not just about selling you a bear tag and a hunt. I want you to come to my camps, and you want to come back because you had a good time.
Well,
you left there probably 10 pounds heavier than what you did when you showed up.
Yeah.
Because you ate well
yeah.
all week long, you know.
Wow. Sounds like my kind of camp.
No, it's your kind, no doubt about it. It's now, most guys' kind of camp.
I got to tell you, I love to eat and I love to cook. I actually wrote a column for a magazine out of St. Louis for 10 or 12 years called The Gravel Bar Gourmet.
Okay.
Because I spent so much time on the river, floating down river,
right,
you
right.
know. And as I got older, hey, fishing wasn't as important. I love being in camp. Often
yeah.
I was by myself.
Absolutely.
But I pitch camp at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sure.
Pretty elaborate, you know. I like being comfortable in even in a remote camp like that. And, buddy, I spend hours just preparing a meal for myself,
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, boy, when you sit back and relax in a reclining camp chair, got the campfire going, you know,
yes.
a meal never tasted better.
No, absolutely.
Wow.
You know what? When I first took over these camps, Dave Winchester started these camps back in 1987. He started out as a deer camp. Whitetail deer hunting was amazing in our province. It was second to none, really. The racks were huge. The deer were plentiful. Everybody was successful. But like anything, overhunting and deforestation kind of took the deer population down.
Right.
So he jumped into the next thing, which was bear hunting. Bear populations were strong. The moose population, we do moose hunting as well. Moose hunting population was strong as well. And, you know, when I took over the camps here last year, as my first year as owner, first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to cook in the kitchen.
Really?
You know? So the fall hunt, I had a couple guys in last fall. One guy out of Minnesota, one guy out of New Hampshire. Both were successful in their hunt. And I said, I'm going to cook this week. I mean, I love to cook.
That's awesome.
At home, I'm the cook, you know.
Yeah, me too.
My wife and kids, when they want something good, they come to me. You know, when they want something from a box, they'll go to each other or to mom, right? Now, not to take away, but she's an amazing woman.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm the cook in the house. There's no doubt about that.
So. Well, that is incredible. Now, I'm the cook of the house, but I'm not the best cook in the house.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My wife's half Italian, man. She's introduced me to meals. I would have never thought about eating, you know.
Yeah.
I've gained weight since we got
there. Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I've always prided myself on the ability to make something from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to go to the kids will open the cupboards up. Dad, there's nothing to eat. Well, just, they I don't know, but maybe they know that I'm going to step up and make something. I think
they're baiting
now,
you.
They're baiting me, exactly.
Yeah.
They know there's something there. They just know that I'll step up and make something good for them.
Well, I grow a big garden. It's just right out the back door, not too far, you know, and I'm one of these guys that gets up crazy early. I'm out there sitting on the back porch drinking coffee, waiting on daylight so I can get out in the garden.
Right.
And I love to run there and get a few fish, veggies, you know, tomatoes, cucumbers. Love hot peppers.
Absolutely, man.
Now, I'm eating a breakfast. I'm cooking a big omelet.
Yeah.
It's smoking.
Oh, yeah.
Not only from the heat.
From the peppers. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. But so much fun. But you know yourself, that in a camp environment like that, there's going to be a good bit of time spent at that dinner table.
Right.
And guys take their time usually eating those meals because there's a lot of conversation going on. But you know, if the food's really good,
yep,
it makes you stick at that table a little bit longer.
Right.
And the conversation's all the better.
Absolutely. You know, and not that I have to go this far, but a lot of times what I'll do is when I'm communicating with you about your upcoming hunt, I'll ask you what are your likes and dislikes in the cookhouse, you know? I want everyone to feel comfortable at the table. I don't want to serve you something that maybe you're not going to be comfortable eating.
Right.
Maybe you have allergies, maybe you have, you know, certain medical conditions that don't allow you to eat certain things, or maybe there's something you really like that I'll bring to camp, you know, just for a special treat. So
that's awesome. And again, depth is in the detail, and if you're hitting those fine points,
yep,
you know, making people relax, allowing them to feel like they're part of the family.
Right.
And when you're serving up your best food and you're putting your heart and soul into
that's
that
right
food, it's not hard to figure out.
Absolutely. No, most of my guys are, when they walk away, they're going, they want more, you know, that's what I appreciate. You know, I want guys wanting more because they love the experience. They've loved the food. They love the camp experience. It makes me happy. I get more excited for them than they are for themselves probably.
I'm certain that is true. But a lot of people kind of like me, you know, I'm sure you still get a lot of clients. I know you want that repeat client because that's what solidifies a business.
Sure it is, yeah.
And
yeah,
particularly in the outfitting business,
right,
that's not an easy business,
right,
by any means. But I'm sure you still get a lot of those folks like myself. They're wanting to check something off the list, not just to say I did it. I want the experience.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Want the feeling. And of course, being an outdoor communication business, just like I'm doing to you right now,
right,
I love getting inside people's heads. I love to find out what makes them tick.
Absolutely.
And I love to find out how they make things work.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's really some unique people in this world just like yourself. And to involve an outfitter and to depend on you,
right,
takes light years out of the process.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it, yeah.
And you've got how many years of experience did you say?
I've been hunting since I was able to walk, you know.
Yeah.
You start out like every kid hunting snakes under boards. And,
yeah.
You know, like I told you earlier about using the clothespin on the board, shooting squirrels, you know.
That was an incredible story.
Oh, yeah. We made homemade guns with a clothespin and a rubber band, you know, and you'd, yeah, fire the little metal piece out of the clothespin.
Yeah.
Just that was in our blood, man. It was who we were growing up, you know. It's like we talked about hunting being a dying art, you know, and it is. It's slowing down. But when we were kids, we didn't have all the technology and all the distractions. So it was who we were, you know, growing up in the country. So
exactly. Well, Corey, let's take a short break here. We need to hear from some of our sponsors, but folks, don't go away. Man, we got some fascinating stuff to talk about yet about bear hunting.
About bear hunting, moose hunting.
In New Brunswick.
Bear, moose, turkey, all above, yeah, exactly.
Wow, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Drury Outdoors, and you're listening to Living the Dream Outdoors Podcast with Phil Cooper and Hunter Heineman.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you joined us for the first segment. I have with me Corey Goodwin of Dave Winchester Sporting Camps out of New Brunswick, Canada. And Corey, man, I tell you, tons of good information in that first segment, but I'd like to dive in to a little bit more about the day-to-day operation of your outfit and kind of describe to people, hey, what can they expect from beginning to end of a hunt? Because it doesn't just happen. You don't just
The work starts early for me.
Absolutely.
I work year-round at the camps to try to make the preparation. Every year we're making improvements to the camps. So when people come, the experience is just better and better every time. With regards to the hunt, I start about 3 weeks early. So I start my bait site. I open my bait sites for my bears. All of our sites are hunt over bait. We don't spot and stalk. We don't hunt with dogs. It's all over bait. So we start about 3 weeks early baiting. So by the time our first week starts, the bait sites are active. I know where all the mamas and cubs are, so I don't put anybody on those sites. I start with about 30 sites, and by the time the season starts, I might be down to 18 to 20 sites.
Right.
Of viable shooters, though. You know, I want to put you on a site where you're going to see good bears. You're going to get opportunities for good bears. And you're going to enjoy the show, you know. If you just want to see bears, I'd put you on mamas and cubs, and you'd enjoy the show all day long.
Exactly.
But so what we do is we run a 3-week program in the spring. So we work the last 2 weeks in May, the first week of June, and we work 1 week in September. There is a little bit of flexibility there. If I got some groups that want to come in second week in June, or some groups that want to push it off closer to October, I'll work with people. You know, I mean, I love to be there. I love to hunt. The camps are where I want to be. So if guys want to camp, I'll accommodate that, right? So we do a 3-week program in the spring. Like I said, we bring no more than 6 guys a week to camp. So I base my annual hunt on about 24 to 30 hunters per year. So it's sustainable hunting. The bear population is strong. You know, the bears are thriving. We got a nice mature bear population right now. Lots of heavy bears out there. Like I said to you earlier, a lot of first-time guys, they shoot a small bear. That's fine, right. Too. I'm okay with that. It leaves a big bear in circulation for someone else. So,
But we
run a good bear program. I do all my baiting with trail mix. I use a lot of smear baits. All our bait sites, you're sitting maybe 25 to 50 yards off the bait. Success rates are great. We run a success rate probably around 85%.
Wow.
Yeah. We've got a good success rate. Like 100% chance you're going to see bears.
Yeah,
The success comes down to the hunter, really. You know?
Oh, we were flabbergasted at how many bears we saw when we went up. But it's not only about seeing bears. You can hear bears going through the woods, you know. Because I laughed. My wife didn't appreciate it. But one evening, the outfitter dropped us off at a stand site. We climbed into the stand, but we're going to have to walk out that evening probably a half a mile down an old road in Bartlett. It was pretty grown up.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, regulations are at dark. You've got to unload that weapon.
It's supposed to be cased after dark. That's right,
exactly. Yeah. And my wife, it got dark, and you could hear bears around through the woods kind of popping their teeth, you know. And we got to get down and walk out. We climbed down that street. She said, there is no way I'm unloading my weapon and walking back to that road. Yeah. Well, you're kind of on your own, but protect me too.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, that's right. No, listen, we do. Our bear sightings are great. We often see guys come back to camp and they'll see 8 or 9, 10 bear in a site. Now, I do have sites with some big bears that own the sites, and you might only see 1 or 2 bears a day.
Right.
You know? A lot of some guys come to camp, and I always tell them, look at the fur quality. The fur quality is what matters most. When you're hunting bear, the last thing you want to do is shoot a bear with a bad fur. You want that if you're a trophy hunter, you want that trophy, look at the fur quality. That's what matters most. A 200-pound bear with a beautiful fur is just as valuable as a 400-pound bear.
Oh, exactly. I killed about a 200-pound bear. My first one, I was just tickled pink with that bear. Right. Of course, brought it back and took it my taxidermist. Had a nice big rug made and hung on the wall in my rustic home next, just across the room from a giant rock fireplace. I can't tell you how many times I sat back in the recliner, fireplace behind me, that good warm air.
Yeah.
You know, I'll cut my own firewood.
Oh, yeah.
Good fire. And sit there and just stare at that.
Absolutely.
That bear rug.
It's majestic, man. The black bears are, people don't realize until they see it the first time. I had a couple of boys in from Michigan last year, and we were going in to check out a site. We were just touring around on a Sunday evening before the hunt, and we were going into a stand. There was a mama with 2 yearlings in there, and they couldn't get over how black they were. They said, it just popped. They knew what they were looking at as soon as they saw it. But the definition in the legs and in the body almost is invisible because they're so black, you know?
Yeah.
That's what makes them, they call them the shadow of the woods, right? They're the shadow of the woods.
Yeah,
you know, they're an elusive animal. You rarely see a bear when you're walking on foot in the woods.
Yeah.
So that's why we got to hunt them over bait. You know, you got to bring them in.
Absolutely. And that the forests up there are pretty dense as well.
I guess it's dense, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some forests you walk through, you can't see your hand in front of your face.
Exactly. And I've never been in conifer forest anyway that dense and thick.
Right.
So it didn't take long to figure out, you really got to bait those animals to get
absolutely,
them out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the thing is, the bait sites, at least that we hunted over, you're in open areas.
Right.
So you got a great open shot. You're not going to be hitting a tree limb or anything like that.
Everything's all cleared out. So you've got a clear shot to the bait. You're at a nice angle. I use all tree stands, proper tree stands with shooting rails. Everything's properly done, so nothing's rinky dink, you know.
Right.
So, I give everybody that goes to the bait sites a satellite communicator. So if you get your bear at 5:30, we're there by 6 o'clock to pick you up. You know, nobody's waiting around till dark. So I've made some innovations to try to make the process a lot smoother for the hunters, the guys coming into camp. I don't want you to sit in your stand for 2 hours waiting for somebody to come pick you up after you shot your bear. So we try to make everything efficient, get everybody back to camp, get everybody fed, you know, and it's all about that experience. I want people to be happy when they're hunting with us. So,
well, one thing I like to point out, and I think you'll appreciate this as an outfitter, you know, every outfitter has their rules, and they have those rules for a reason. And one of the safety rules that the outfitter I had dealt with, I'm sure you do too, you shoot that bear and particularly if you're inexperienced, you stay in that stand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And wait for that outfitter to get there.
That's
because,
right.
You know, a bear is a pretty good-sized animal. And I think so many people, and I've seen videos of guys doing this and messing with bears, you know, a bear coming up the ladder or something, you know.
Right.
And don't even bother to yell at it because they want it to get close for a photograph.
Right.
And I saw one guy actually kicked the bear in the nose, you know, and I said, how foolish is that?
Yeah, should never got that close in the first place.
Exactly, shouldn't.
Right.
If you're not going to shoot it, scare it off. But, you know, a bear could grab a man's or a lady's foot like that and jerk you out of that stand like a hot dog.
He'd pull you down to the woods like a wet rag, no doubt about it. He'd be gone.
Exactly.
100%, yeah.
You're messing with your own life when you pull that kind of stunt.
Right.
And we had a young gentleman in our group that actually got down out of his stand and walked around through the woods, you know, hunting.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be leaving camp.
Yeah.
You know, oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're there for. That's what us as guides, that's what we're there for. We know the bears. We know the territory. We know what to look for. A lot of guys, I mean, I'm no fool. Guys come to camp, I learn stuff from my hunters all the time.
Absolutely.
And I'm always up for new ideas.
Yeah. However, but I bet you've learned to read people, too, though.
100%. 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's why every Sunday when I get guys coming to camp, We all sight rifles in. Even if you're inexperienced, why would you not want to go zero rifling? And oftentimes I'll find there's one guy in the crowd who maybe hasn't fired that much, you know? So I want to make sure that they can shoot before I put them in a stand. I don't want wounded bears. I don't want a bear being shot in the hind end and wounded, you know, and not find it. So really, we try to do it smart, too, at the same time, but respectful to the guys that are coming to camp. I give everyone a chance to prove themselves, and then we'll go hunt and have a great time. It's all about that hunt and then making the memories, right? So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a process there that needs to be followed. It's, I'm not going to call this guy's name, but very well-known hunter here in the United States, kind of from the Northeast, but he used to guide in Canada some, and he told me the story about a client that his that had wounded a bear, and he had to go looking for it, you know, and this guy was a big old guy, but he was kind of a macho dude, right. And rather than carrying a shotgun or whatever the guy carried, he would carry a hand axe.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah. Sir. Yeah, he was a big, burly guy. Well, you know, it's kind of like I heard a little Chinese gal say one time, her forte was bear hunting. She said, you know, I'm about one bear in 100 is really mean. Or I think she used to figure three, about right. 3 in 100.
Right.
She said, I met all three of them last year. Well, this guy was tracking the bear, you know.
Right.
Getting dark. He's a big fella, but that bear wound up getting to him, got him down and bit him 17 times.
I believe it. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, a black, don't get me wrong, a black bear is typically not an aggressive animal.
Right.
But a wounded black bear, or if you're letting them get too close, anything can happen. So, you know, there's no sense of risk in that, right? So that's why we say, wait for your guide to come. Send me a text on your satellite communicator. We'll come in, meet up with you. You'll hear us coming. We'll get you out of the stand. We'll look for the bear together. If you want to lead the way to look for the bear, that's fine. But let me be with you. That way we do it smart, right? So,
exactly.
And it's always good to have somebody there with you anyway. You bet.
You bet.
100%.
Well, man, it sounds, I know I've been there and done that. As they say, it's a wonderful experience. And if you want to get your heart rate up, that first bear you see.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to go up.
It'll do it every time.
You bet.
Yeah, it's great exercise for your heart, no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I'm the type. I always pack cameras with me and that sort of thing.
Right,
and it was fun. I actually photographed the bear before I actually took the shot, had videos and the whole nine yards, you know.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to do, but you gotta use some common sense with that stuff, too. You know, if you're banging and clanging, your bear's going to go away.
Absolutely, yeah. And so also, I know we're getting to the end of our segment here, but I want to let you know, we also have the non-resident turkey program now, too, as well.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you brought that up.
So we've got a non-resident turkey program in our province now. Started last year. It's done as a draw through the outfitters, but it does allow non-residents to come hunt the eastern wild turkey, which that population is thriving in our area right now.
That is awesome. So number of things you can come and do at your operation. Run through them for me again.
We got black bear hunting. Wild eastern turkey hunting, moose hunting, grouse, woodcock, smallmouth bass fishing, rainbow trout fishing, brook trout fishing. We've got lots of waterfalls and excursions you can take on an ATV, check things out. We've got a good operation. We got a lot of great land to hunt on and to hang out on.
And so. I
got
to ask you, what kind of UTVs is it you use?
Of course, Can-Am. You know that. Nothing but the best. Can-Am, man.
You betsy, boy. I've ridden in a lot of them.
They've never let me down, so.
Well, buddy, it sounds like you got a fabulous operation up there. Closing out here, tell people how they can get a hold of you or find you.
You can check us out. Just look us up on the internet. Our website is huntingnewbrunswick.com. Huntingnewbrunswick.com, just like it sounds. So check that out. Give me a call anytime. My phone number, I'll tell you right now, is 506-425-9044. My email is winchestersportingcamp@gmail.com. So check us out. Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Hey, man, it's been wonderful having you on the show.
Yeah, I love it, man. It's awesome. I finally got my seat at the table.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's been great.
Well, from Corey and myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get in the outdoors and live your dreams as well. I'm Bill Cooper.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Boat Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, The Fallen Outdoors, Ledco Sinkers and Lure Company, Turnbow Outdoors, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Big Ed's Guide Service, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, On the Hook TV, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, Spare Rib Inn in Steelville, Missouri, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.